there's nothing worse than wearing clothes that don't fit right. That's why Tomboy X makes size and gender-inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. Queer-founded and run for over 10 years, you can trust they know a thing or two about making the perfect pair. It's our anniversary, so we're offering 25% off the entire store. Valid April 10th to the 14th. Feel comfortable in your own skin. Shop online now at TomboyX.com. Tomboy X. Fit for you, just as you are.
Gorgeous George and Goes, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on.
From the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, this is MMA Junkie Radio.
We rollin'!
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes reporting for duty here on a Thursday. Excited to talk to you here for the next hour or so as we close in on UFC 269. This Saturday, it's the final pay-per-view for the UFC and the second to the last show for the Ultimate Fighting Championship. So we'll cover that. We'll cover the latest news. And, of course, a quick reminder that this weekend, Goes and I will be hosting a UFC 269 watch-along. Along with our friends from Panda and Tipico, it's brought to you by MMA Junkie and USA Today Sports. We're excited to be back. We used to do these for literally like 3 years, took the last couple off. People have been asking, when's the next one? Well, we're back. And the next one is this Saturday. It starts at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, 10 Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific. Those are prelims and then main card. We're with you for 9 fights going down this weekend. But before we can get to the madness that is UFC 269, what about the chaos that took place yesterday between Daniel Cormier and Dominic Cruz? Really more from Dominic Cruz, leveled at his friend and colleague, Daniel Cormier. Goes, this guy outed him in public. He says he doesn't do homework and he has to mute him when he's listening to him. What the F?
I am completely shocked by it because it's not like he was baited into the conversation or anything like that. This was just all on his own, and it's during his fight week. Like he had to have known that something like this was going to blow up. And I don't know that you want to be dealing with this. You know, afterwards, Daniel Cormier was able to sit down with him, you know, an impromptu sit down. And that's just time that he could have used cutting weight, studying his opponent. This to me is a big distraction. But if you look at what he said, in this country, in this world, everybody has opinions. And that's fine. You know, we're not all going to agree on things. The things he said about Daniel Cormier, maybe they're true. I don't know. I'm not there. But the problem that I have is he started it off by saying, we're friends, and I'm sorry, that's just not something you do to a friend. If this person is your friend and you really care, you pull them aside and you say, hey, man, I noticed you've been doing this and that. This is the way I do things. Maybe I could help you. I think maybe you could do this a little better or whatever. But you don't do that in public. He did it in public. And the only reason I can think he did it in public was just to kind of smear him, make him look bad. And I just think that really sucks.
There's so many steps from what he could have done to what he did along the way. You know, like you said, pull him aside, make subtle hints, subtle suggestions, or get to the point. But again, all in private. And then as we get to public, you know, even if I think Cormier probably would have been okay with DC, man, I mute his ass. Ha ha ha, everybody laughs. No, seriously, you know, I just, maybe it's something about when my friends commentate on me, I feel like they don't know what they're talking about. So I just would rather not listen to them. Ha ha, everybody's still giggling. You know, you make it like you versus me type of thing, which he's always had that kind of type of banter with, like Bisping, for example. And you could still almost send a subtle message that way. Like sometimes I feel like he hasn't seen my fights because I'm dipping when when he says I'm not, or I'm zigging when I'm really Zach, you know, whatever. Again, this would be in public, but so subtle that only maybe DC could pick it up, you know, where DC then sees that and says, hey, man, was there any truth? You know, you see what I'm saying? But again, now they're talking in private. So again, there's so many steps to get there that a colleague and friend would do. You know, we've worked with a lot of people over the years at MMA Junkie. Some we got to know really, really well, and we call them great friends, good friends, friends. Those guys are all right, or that gal's all right. You know, whatever. They're all the way down to, sometimes I don't like that guy or gal or whatever. But not because you have a hatred to them. You either haven't gotten to know them, or you just don't really, there's a gap of something, you know, age, gender, I don't know, whatever. But still, man, you don't clown your colleagues and friends, like much less your friends like that. And this guy said that that's what he is. You know, we know he's a colleague, but he's a friend. And for years, and they're in a fraternity of champions. You know what I mean? They've done that struggle to get to the top, stay to the top. Both of them have title defenses. I don't understand where this came from. And then to top it off, when him and DC had the sit down, he still was almost a little bit on the defensive. Like, what did I do wrong? You know, like, because literally, I think from the time that he said it to the time that he talked, I'm surprised no one said, what the fuck? You know, like another guy, a mutual friend, let's call it Bisbee. And maybe Dominic had said, bro, it's roughest weight cut ever. I am absent-minded. Let me do that sit down with DC and we'll start cleaning it up. I mean, he literally basically said, this guy's no good at his job. I mean, he comes in, grabs a bag of money and leaves. And that is not a good look, man, for, you know, an employer that is probably going to go and evaluate and see. And I mean, what if this were to cost Cormier his job?
Yeah, it's the weirdest situation of all time, because when at the sit down, the first thing he wanted to do was have DC talk about what he doesn't do right. And so right away, I think he's just not grasping at why everybody's jaw is dropping. It's not the things you said. It's the fact that the place that you said it, you know, in front of that many people with that many eyeballs, like, it doesn't make any sense to do it that way. Nobody's saying you have to like Daniel Cormier or what he does, how he does it. We're just saying, why are you putting the guy on blast in front of everyone like that? And it's not like Daniel's sitting there going, well, I wish I had my day to say you suck. He's not saying that. He's pissed off that you did that in that forum.
Right.
It's just a shitty thing. And so even after the moment he said it to the moment they had that sit down, a lot of hours passed by where he could have sat down and evaluated what he did. And the way he acted in the sit down to me shows that he didn't really understand what it is he did wrong.
Mm-hmm. Here's the quote from Dominic Cruz to start all this off. He says, I watch Anik do so much homework leading up to the fight. People have no idea how much homework he has to do to be prepared for that. And the most kudos goes to him. He leads us in the broadcast with how he talks. When it comes to DC, I usually mute it. Cruz continued with a smirk. I love DC. He's my friend. But to me, from my experience, he doesn't do the homework. He wants to get in and get out, get the job done, make his money. And I think he cares about us, but it's just different. He doesn't do the preparation from my experience. He might now. I'm hoping he watches some film this time on my fight so he knows what I'm doing and why I'm doing it. But I'm not going to hold my breath on that. That's for sure. He continues. Honestly, I'm never perfect. There's a roster of 400, 600 fighters, and not everybody's going to agree with what I say either. It's all perspective in there. And DC is a gifted athlete. I think Bisping does a lot of homework. I think he watches a lot of film. I think certain people watch the film, and I count on that to do the film study. The reason I do the film study is because it's bigger than me. I'm not in there talking to hear myself talk and to be right. I'm in there to support the athletes, and talk about why they're great, and that's what makes them great. And in order to do that, I need to watch film. So that's what started all off. And obviously the first part is the one that had the most teeth. I was flabbergasted on many levels. And I think when Cruz sat down with DC on DC's YouTube channel, again, they got off to a start, but you could tell from DC, he was willing to let this blow over, at least on camera. But maybe can you clarify, Cruz, and clean this up, wink, wink? I guess, you know, because again, Cruz could have just said, bro, you always seem to get some of my strategies wrong. And Cruz could play it off by saying, I'm just levels ahead of all you. I'm a Jedi, you know. But no, I mean, when he said he just comes in, gets his money, like he's applying it to every fighter. I mean, that sounds to me like he's applying it to Oliveira and Poirier, Nunes and Pena. And this guy's, you know, one third of the trio that calls the fights, along with John Anik and Joe Rogan. You know, people have actually said that about Rogan in the last few years, and that's why he does less shows. And of course, he's got the hugely popular podcast. He's tremendously rich. It's almost like no one could blame him, but he's earned that seat, goes. And DC in a way has too, but Joe Rogan has earned that seat. And I think that's why Dana leaves him there. He's going to add his color. And I'm not saying Joe Rogan doesn't do his research. I'm just saying he probably doesn't do as much as Dominic Cruz, which is what DC was saying to Cruz. I do watch him. I just don't watch as much as you, but there's other ways to prepare. And that's true. I don't know. I'm just saying. What you could tell was that what at least DC wanted to clarify was, like, that was a dick move. Friends don't do that to friends. Almost like that was a good time to sit down. And when a father sits down his son and says, did you tell the teacher that these three boys came in late from recess? Yeah. Well, that's being a rat. That's being a tattletale. We don't do that. You just mind your own business. Let the teacher deal with that. I don't want you to be late from recess. So you're there to learn, blah, 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 you know? But how many times has a parent sat down with a kid and said, no, there's just certain things we navigate around and not do, you know, bro code, family code, teammate code, or whatever, unless it's really doing you harm. And if it is, Dominic's one of the toughest SOBs in the world. He can confront DC, confronts Bisping. Bisping's saying he's always trying to fight me. You know, they're never going to fight, obviously, but he can walk up to him with confidence, go, what the hell, you know? And that's the level that killed me the most, to be honest. And it almost makes you reconsider every single email, tweet, DM thing that you ever send. It almost makes you consider your list of friends and who's my Dominic, you know, like, what do I need to start watching out? Like, because, oh man, goes that, that's like, hey man, this guy drinks, you know, he has a sip of Courvoisier that nobody knows about, or I've seen him wink at the ring card girls. And what's next, dude? You know, what's next? I mean, seriously, that was cold.
He attacked his character. You know, he went after his character because it's not like how many people do you know that maybe phone it in at their jobs, but they're awesome at everything else? Like, usually that behavior carries over into other things. So in a way, you know, he's attacking his character. He may be alluding to that. Maybe he did that in his own fights, you know, maybe he does that with his own life. Like, it's just a real, real shitty thing to do. And I got to give Daniel Cormier his props, because that probably could have been a lot worse. That sit down, Daniel had every right to go into him even more, but I bet you he held back a little bit because of that camaraderie that you were talking about, where he probably at some point said, all right, look, man, it's fucking fight week. I know what it's like. This guy has a fight. Maybe we could talk about this when that's all over, because really the things Dominic was saying weren't making sense. And I think Daniel probably could have pushed them a little bit more, but I think he did understand the situation they were in.
That's the only thing I'll give Cruz credit for, is he was willing to talk to him, because that he did as a friend. It is fight week. He's experiencing a weight cut, and I'm sure, and we'll never know, but I'm sure fight week must be something pretty nutty when it, in terms of, you know, the weight that you have to lose and knowing that the other guy on the other side could possibly do permanent damage to you. And obviously, you know what the stakes are when it comes to wins and losses, especially those guys. You want to fight for titles, to get to pay-per-view points, to keep sponsors, to main event, you know, all that. So the 11 minutes that he gave him, great. I think Daniel could recognize it wasn't going anywhere. I'm glad they just kind of ended it. I'm glad there was some laughter. And I hope this doesn't affect Dominic on Saturday. I guess if one thing I can give Dominic credit is, I think he's good at compartmentalizing and just, okay, that was that. Now I got to go back to my weight cut. Now I got to go back to finish my study on my opponent or getting my rest and doing what. And I don't think so. But I think there's a lot of emotional fighters that would be shaken up by the last 24 hours if they knew that they hurt a friend. And I don't even understand if he I don't know if he knows. I don't know if he understands that he hurt his friend.
Well, you know what, though? We're going to find out on Saturday because we still have some time. And who knows, maybe more things are going to come out, maybe more conversations. But I'll tell you what, Dominic Cruz is the one that's going to be in that cage. And it's going to be hard not to see Daniel Cormier's face right there in that front row. And I've often said this before, it's there are times where you're at a party, at a club, and there is a girl that you dated a long time ago, and it's been over. The second you see her face, you want to know what she's doing, right? And you're watching, who's that guy? Who's she talking to? Same thing, man. Same thing. You might be fighting. You might see Daniel Cormier. And even for 2-3 seconds, something might pop in your head like, man, I fucked up. Man, I shouldn't have said that. I wonder what he's saying about me now. And that's just not the headspace you want to be in during a fight.
I wonder what it would be like in the Apex where you can kind of hear everything. This one's at the T-Mobile.
Yeah.
So at least that part will be drowned out, but. You know, I mean, now Cormier's in the uncomfortable spot of probably having to fluff up Cruz's fight a little bit just to show there's no hard feelings, maybe, because the minute he says anything negative, the fans are going to come out. I'm sure at some point they're going to want to bury this, but that was cold, man. That was cold, cold, cold. I just couldn't believe it. I have enemies that I wouldn't do that to. I just stick to my lane. Oof. All the stuff I've been told off the record, all the stuff I've seen growing up, you know, and as a man, you know, knowing that you could take someone down on so many levels, you know, and I just couldn't look myself in the mirror, man. I couldn't do it, you know, and even to the ones that I just dislike now, completely disagreed with the way they handled their lives or whatever. I'm just out of their lives and they're out of mine, and that's that. And if they get discovered one day, then good for the person that discovered them. Or if they change their ways, good for them. But I just, oh man, you know, I know the mobster mentality is so big on rats, you know. And I remember when I would watch those movies, and they would say there's nothing worse than a rat, you know. And I was thinking, motherfucker, you're a gangster. You do bad shit all the time. You kill people. Like, I'm pretty sure there's things that are happening that are worse than being a rat. But I guess they had already accepted that killing was just part of the job. But one thing we're never going to do is we're never going to rat on each other, you know? Mm-hmm. And I slowly got that when something would happen, you know, towards me. And it's something that I probably could have changed if the other guy came up to me, like, as a man and said, hey, man, that ain't cool what you're doing. I'll give you an example, like, you know, you like maybe seeing multiple girls or whatever, and a lot of younger men that trying to figure out what they're doing. And, you know, I had a buddy that was working with one of the girls. Actually, well, I don't even think that I think he just might have liked her. I don't know. But, you know, he could easily pull me aside and said, listen, man, I see what you're doing. And from your end, you might think it's cool. Or you might not know, but I've seen this girl crying in the hallway, you know, she thinks there might be something there and you're doing something, you know, come on. And that, and, you know, maybe it would have resonated and maybe it wouldn't, I don't know, but I would have appreciated him telling me that than telling them that. And then us having this kind of problem, you know what I mean? Cause in the end, yeah. I guess technically he probably was right, but the path to get there was just one I don't agree with.
But see, here's the thing. I bet you when you explain that to him, he's not going to go, you know what? You're right. Most people with common sense would know that. So then you have to wonder, well, then why did he do it? And I think it was to hurt you, you know, to put you in a bad spot to get what he wanted. And I think that's probably what happened here.
So then we're all bad along the way. I may have been doing bad stuff, but he's kind of doing something bad. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Anyway, all right. So listen, the stories are on Junkie. If you want to look at, you know, Cruz's comments, and then we posted a story this morning of the podcast that Cormier did with Cruz on his YouTube channel. And we posted links there if you want to kind of get up to speed. I'll probably be looking throughout the day just to see if there's a part three or if this thing's over. But one of the coldest things I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, that was pretty brutal.
It was. So, yeah, yesterday, folks, they had the press conference. You know, fighters on the UFC 269 did a lot of press, and a lot of them tackled a bunch of different topics. And I thought MMA Junkie did a great job with that. So I would guide you towards MMA Junkie if you want to see that. I see everything that happens on the channel that we use to communicate. And, you know, each fighter gets assigned a particular fighter, and great work is done by our writers and editors and videographers. So check it out. Get familiar with the card. So when you get into UFC 269, you know just as much about Poirier versus Oliveira as you do about Emmett versus Ige, as you do about Muniz versus Anders, as you do about Priscilla Cachoeira versus Jillian Robertson, which is the first fight. Saturday night's card has 15 fights so far. 15! We're going to be with you for 9 of them on our UFC 269 watch-along Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. So we get the 4 prelims that are on ESPN. We watch that together. Who doesn't have ESPN at this point? And then the pay-per-view, obviously you have a decision to make. If you're watching the pay-per-view and, like Cruz says, you want to turn down DC, turn them down and watch with us. We will watch the pay-per-view together. Goz and I will do some commentary, some play-by-play and color, along with just cracking jokes, busting balls, hanging out, answering questions. Sometimes we have surprise pop-in guests as well. It's really, really a fun time. And if you didn't order the pay-per-view, we're your jam. I mean, there's nothing better that you can do. Going to Twitter and get a live play-by-play, calling your buddy and saying, tell me what he's doing now. That buddy's only going to hang in there for a round tops, and that's if he really, really loves you. Or texting somebody. It just does not get better than to hear it come out of our mouths as we're watching it. So I highly, definitely recommend that path for those that say, nah, you know what? I'm not paying $64.99. They didn't get me, or I just can't do it. Listen to us while we do our broadcast. And frankly, there's a lot of people that are only interested in like the last three fights, just the title fights. There's some snobs out there. So you can dip in and dip out of our broadcast however you like. You can listen on your smartphones, tablets, laptops and desktops. So whatever the situation is, you're at a wedding, if you're a kid and you're at a winter formal or whatever, and you got one pod in here, you can kind of hear what we're up to. Kids nowadays in that regard are lucky, Goz, of what they could pull off. You know what I'm saying? Like we remember we had the Watchman, the Sony Watchman. It was really, really thick with an antenna, and you're trying to grab the actual satellite feed of CBS, ABC, NBC, you know, if it was on one of those, you had a shot, and it'd be kind of grainy, not the HD that we get now. Probably even grainier than standard definition.
Cell phones were just coming in right around the time I was graduating. We had beepers, but you'd have to go out of class to go to the payphone to send the message. And even then you had to kind of like decode it. It was dumb, but I remember the Watchman. Yeah, that thing was probably like the size of a big cell phone, right? But the antenna was what was just huge.
Yeah, no doubt. All right. So you got the info for UFC 269 and for our watch along. And we'll give you one more, reminder before the end of the show. I guess some of the others. Oh, and I do want to give a shout out to Adam Hunter. He is a comedian who has been doing this for a long time, even before he's probably come across your radar. He's a professional comedian, except most people in the MMA space know him as the MMA roasted guy, which he does that tremendously. So Adam's a four-time state wrestling champion from the state of Maine. He loves combat sports. He was a wrestler, and he loves MMA, and he got in the MMA space about a decade ago, roasting fighters at MMA Roasted. Give him a follow. He's hilarious. He's been doing this for a long time, and he's entrenched in our sport. In fact, he writes the scripts for the World MMA Awards, and you know he's had some specials on UFC Fight Pass. Good friend of ours. We saw him last night, and I want to give a special shout-out to Colonel Joe Gilpin. as well as his lieutenant Mike. I didn't get Mike's last name, but they are they're airmen. They're part of the Air Force. We met them at JBLE, which is Joint Base Langley Eustis. Well, excuse me, we met Colonel Gilpin there, and he's kept in touch. He was in town, and we took them to go see Adam Hunter Ghost. Colonel Gilpin was spitting his drink out at times. I mean, he couldn't handle it. I looked over at Mike. He was rolling, too.
Yeah, I was scared for my outfit that night because he kept almost spitting out his drink on me. But yeah, he had a good time. Adam brought it. It was pretty funny.
He did, man. It was hilarious. He has one more show tonight if you're in town, and he has a show this Sunday as well over at the Strat at the LA Comedy Club. He's the headliner. It was really, really cool. It was really, really good to just get out. We had some good laughs. I mean, he was clowning the whole room. Goz and I were his token Mexicans, so we got the snuck into the country in a tunnel joke. You know, Latino wives, Mexican wives, whatever, have kids at a young age. So our grandma's 36, I believe, which would probably make our mom 18 when she had us. I don't know. So that was hilarious. And, you know, he was clowning everything, man. He went after gay and lesbian, black, Mexican, you know, Hispanics, whites, the country people. He had a nice farmers only joke. It was hilarious. He was clowning. I think he honestly flat out didn't say you're ugly to someone, but basically that was the jab. I'm telling you, man, I had an awesome time.
He literally, now that I think about it, I think he got to just about everyone in the audience at some point.
He did. He told one girl, he goes, he looked in one direction and he goes, wow, you're hot. He goes, where are you from? And she started to answer. He goes, not you, the girl behind you. Oh, my God. But his not you, like.
Like, what are you thinking? Why would
if
you
would have said, like, if you would have said, like, no, I'm talking to the 10 behind you. You're just a 9. Now that leaves her feeling good. Okay, I'm a 9. You know, and I guess there might be a supermodel behind me. He said, not you, the girl behind you, or something like that. God almighty, man. Like, I watched that lady and she was just shook up. The guy next to her, you know, if you're ever going to rush the stage, man, it might be that one. I don't know, but he just took it all right. Cause basically he was just told his lady's not the hot lady in the room. He was clowning the old couple in front of us. I mean, it was funny. It was funny. I had a splendid time. Mm-hmm. All right, so continuing here, I guess some of the biggest news that's out there aside from this whole thing is Dana White now goes is saying he's interested in free agent Kayla Harrison. He kind of blew her off a few months ago. It's funny how things changed. I don't remember her taking a fight since then, you know, so I don't know if her numbers come down or what. You know how Dana White is. He's pretty much on the surface a businessman. He's interested if he can pay you what he wants versus what you want. A lot has to do with someone declined to fight. Somebody doesn't seem to want to fight. You know what I mean? Like, but is that music to your ears, or did you kind of want to see your head over to Bellator? Bellator's got a deeper 145-pound division and a killer over there in Chris Cyborg, who's not Kayla Harrison's teammate, or the UFC, which is obviously the bigger stage. But they don't have very many featherweights over there. They just lost one in Felicia Spencer. And the queen at the top there is Amanda Nunes, who has double duty. She's got to defend 35 and 45. So you're not going to get too many chances to get at her. That said, I don't think Kayla would have to wait long. I'm pretty sure that's a fight that would get made quickly. But their teammates, it's not a John Fitch, Mike Swick, Josh Koscheck situation where they're not going to fight each other. But what I'm saying is, I don't know, you know, I don't know how they'll navigate that. But what like I said, is this music to your ears, or you prefer her going over to Bellator?
I actually prefer her going over to Bellator, because if she goes over to the UFC, I feel like it's for one fight. It's against a girl that I don't know that she can beat right now. And that particular girl has also mentioned, I'm getting closer to being done. So it just kind of seems like a one-off to me. I don't really understand it. And I don't know if the UFC is going to really pay her. She's been very adamant about this decision is pretty much all about money. I don't know if the UFC is going to match those kinds of numbers. Like when you look at some of the bigger fighters in the UFC, I don't know that the value is there if it's par for the course. So she goes to Bellator. There's an interesting fight there that can be a rematch. And then there's other fighters. You know, that division's a little bit more established, I think. So, and Bellator has shown that they're just open to cross promotion. So you never know. Maybe she could do something else. They could figure something else out. So I would say Bellator. So music to my ears, not so much. Now, what I have always proposed is, look, Bellator can do nutty things from time to time. And we all saw the trade between the UFC and ONE Championship. What I would do is, if I'm Ray Sefo, I would re-sign Kayla Harrison, make a deal with Bellator, send her over to Bellator for one fight, the Cyborg fight, and then whatever happens there, have the possibility for a rematch by sending Chris Cyborg over to PFL for one season. I think that would be fun. You know, she's still a PFL fighter, but she still gets that fight in Bellator, and you also kind of get Chris Cyborg to come over for one season. And you know, obviously you can offer some other fighters back and forth. You know, there's a Grand Prix going on, right? Maybe you can add some assistance. There's always a Grand Prix going on. And maybe Bellator has a couple fighters that just you could throw over a Benson Henderson for a season or something, you know? Sometimes you just get in these situations where you have fighters that just don't make sense right now. They've lost twice to the champ or whatever. Maybe a trade, something like that, where you could still kind of keep her in the PFL, but still get her to get that big fight.
Do you think that the UFC would want Amanda to retire? I can't say undefeated because she lost to Kat Zingano. And she's got four losses in her career. Three were before the UFC. But I'm talking about undefeated since she's become the women's GOAT. Because think about if Kayla Harrison comes over and wins. PFL gains a lot of street cred. See, we got some talent over here too. You know, they sent someone over that. It's kind of like a Fedor thing, pride. Hey, our guy will smash your guys. In this case, gals. But she comes over and beats Amanda. Now Amanda takes kind of that loss home, you know, as she retires, or maybe it lights a fire and they go 1-1. Maybe they have a trilogy. Who knows? But do you think the UFC, in a way, if they know Amanda's on her way out, and if they know that that division is on its lifeline, is it best to maybe just say, this is the story of one Amanda Nunes, you know, when we had that 145-pound division, but it unfortunately went away, kind of like the legend of somebody that like Cy Young. He won 500 and something games back when you could throw pretty much pitch every day if you wanted to. That's just the legend of Cy Young. No one will ever win 500 games. It's almost impossible to win 300 games. So we just call it the legend of Cy Young. That's just the untouchable type of record that he has. Could they maybe look at that, you know, and until like the UFC 155-pound division, where it just kind of went away because they either had no interest or they felt there was no interest, and then 10 years later it came back when they had enough talent. But could something like that maybe be in the back of their mind?
I think from a business standpoint, you probably look at it and say, we could build the hell out of this fight, maybe even do an Ultimate Fighter around it, who knows, really build it up. And if Kayla wins, then we know we have a rematch and then possibly a trilogy. And I think they probably look at it as, it's a long shot if Kayla wins, but if she does, we feel like Amanda would beat her at least two of the three to kind of settle who has the better fighter. So I think they probably look at it that way.
Maybe. Kayla has a big price tag. PFL apparently pays her very well. And this is aside from the million that she makes. She's been able to negotiate good paydays along the way, like meaning her regular season fights and that first playoff win before she gets to the $1 million fight. So this is going to be interesting to see where it winds up, who winds up with her. But I've just been so down on the 145-pound division in the UFC. I just think it's almost non-existent. And I'm not in a hurry for them to fill up the cupboard, honestly. And why? I get plenty from strawweight, flyweight, and bantamweight. I get enough of that. You know, like I really don't need to see another division that's just forced on us. You know, Holly Holm went up and won and competed. So did Jermaine Duran. I mean, they're bantamweights, goes. You know what I mean? Amanda went up. She's a bantamweight. Luckily, she's a tough SOB, and she beat the greatest featherweight ever in Chris Cyborg. So that was legit. Hats off. But she's a bantamweight. There just really aren't that many featherweights out there. And the ones that they are, you can count them on a couple, you know, two hands maybe. And the really good ones you can count on one hand. That's not a division. You know, that's somebody else can handle that. No. Bellator takes it in the shorts and says, no, I guess we don't have enough. There's not enough 125-pounders out there, so we don't have a 125-pounder. And they live with that. You know, those are the consequences. Remember WEC? We're just lighter weight classes. And they did their thing. I don't know why the UFC feels like, oh, we gotta touch everybody. You know, we gotta. I mean, so that at that point, bring in the atom weights too. There's an atom weight division, a women's 105-pound division. You know, there's a men's strawweight division too. We've seen a few compete, but they don't do that. So I just don't understand why they're so in love with this one, especially when again, it's just they cut Megan Anderson or didn't resign or whatever. Felicia just retired. The other ones really just kind of come up and go, what's going on here? Aspen came up. Couldn't make weight. I heard you guys needed me. Yeah. You know, it's dumb.
It's silly, and it doesn't make any sense. You know, when you look at the way they run everything else.
Meanwhile, they could be adding, you know. So if they were to say, "Man, we need that champ, dog. We got these pay per views. Every once in a while, we need a man to go up there. Or we need to do fuck you. You know what you need? 65 and 75, and get rid of 70. And there's a plethora of fighters that would spill into all of them. We have a lot of 185ers, 155ers, and 170 that would just, I know some quick math. There's probably 80 middleweights, 80 welterweights, and 80 lightweights. There's probably more, but I'm using this number specifically. That's 240 athletes between 155 and 185. 240 is also divisible by four, all right? And what would be left is 60. To still have 60 quality lightweights, 60 quality, we'll call them super lightweights at 165, 60 quality welterweights at 175, and 60 quality middleweights at 185, that's plenty. And I'm telling you, it's probably even more. And now you'd have an extra champion in divisions that would be deep, and you'd also save a lot of careers because you'd give life to Masvidal, who's lost twice to the champ, Covington, who's lost twice to the champ, maybe even Kevin Lee. You know, I know they're no longer doing business with Kevin Lee, but tweeners that were caught between, like, bro, 55 is fucking killing me, but these guys are mopping me up. Those 15 pounds make a difference at 70, you know, and same for 70 and 85. There's a few 85ers like Sean Strickland. A lot of people don't know this. He used to compete as a welterweight. He fought Kamaru Usman. Mm-hmm. You know, now he's doing well as a middleweight, but who knows? Who knows how, you know, he maybe 175 would be for him, you know, but he's competing at 180. We used to tell Brad Tavares the same thing. Would you ever go to 70? 70 is too much. Would you ever go to 75? It didn't sound like it, but he kind of at least went, well, like kind of like a contemplation.
Yeah.
It would revive it, man. It would be the greatest thing ever. And I can't believe we've been saying this for 10 years and they just won't give in.
I think he's probably just at a point where, because it all makes sense. I think he's just being stubborn.
Well, he was stubborn with women's MMA, and look what that cost him. Right? Mm-hmm. Could have done that 5 years ago. The prize of Gina Carano lives in Vegas. He's friends with her dad. He could have milked all that early on, you know, if I guess. But I'm not shitting on that, because at the time he was navigating his business, trying to figure it out, you know, and that's fine. But he doesn't catch everything. He's brilliant. He's a great promoter. But he hasn't been right about everything either. 55 went away one time. That was more, yeah. I guess, before, when was it? Yeah, no, it was part of SCG era. Zuffa era. It went away in the early 2000s. Yeah. They had already purchased it. And they said, nah, this BJ Penn guy, Kyle Uno, Jens, nah. You know, and we're just going to do what we're doing over here. We got WEC and we don't need 55. And look what 55 is like right now. It's the headline at UFC 269. Khabib Nurmagomedov, he was begging him, don't retire. Conor McGregor, the biggest star ever. You know, oh, man, the history of 155 is amazing.
Mm-hmm. It's the standard for the UFC. It's the division I think that's been the most consistent for the last 20 years, probably.
And this isn't a shit on Dana White, because again, I'm saying he's a brilliant promoter. He's done a lot of things right, just hasn't done them all right. Heck, goes, I would even go to bat with him if somebody were to go, I know, huh? And remember when he fumbled the Fedor Emelianenko? No. They took a private plane. They met with those guys. And from all accounts, it sounds like to me they came in with some good money. It's just Vadim at the time, I think, was Vadim Finkelstein was his name, was Fedor's manager. That boy got greedy. They went a bit too far, and these guys just got a bit turned off, and that was that. It's not like he didn't finally put his tail between his legs and said, that dude's great. We need him over here. Mm-hmm. So they tried in that regard. They just couldn't make it happen. But anyway, getting back to Kayla. He's interested. Great. If he thinks he can be, you know, if somebody's telling him, bro, there's 45ers all over the world that are putting on great fights. We can get 10 of them over here. We have a division. Then that's something I haven't heard or seen, yeah. You know, but anyway, moving on from that. Quick reminder, UFC 269 watch along, Goz and I hosting it this Saturday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific is when we'll start. And then we'll take you all the way through the pay-per-view, which starts at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific. Join us and please do us the favor, if you don't mind, of retweeting what you see out there in regards to that. Or sharing like on Facebook, or just an organic post from you as well. Tag us, please. We'll obviously retweet or share or like and get it out there. I don't know too many people that have dipped in and said, this sucks. I'm never coming back. Usually they're in, you know. And if it's just not for them because they prefer to just watch it on their own, that's fine too. But a lot
hang
of people
in the chat room.
A lot of people that have joined the party, man, they dig it so much so that when we went away, people were still coming, you know, like where are these guys? They were wondering where we were. Sean O'Malley goes, wants Jose Aldo. And I was like, remember when Marlon Vera said bitch on our show? Mm-hmm. Some incident that happened over there in the UK, he just goes, bitch. It was kind of funny. That's what I said when I saw Sean O'Malley say that, because I was like, bro, you only want to fight in Vegas and not a ranked fighter until you get your payday. He sounded like such a diva the last time we had a round of fights with him. That I was like, I respect you. You're fun. People like you. You've done your thing. I'm not hating on that. But the competition side, the prize fighting side, where you're supposed to be testing yourself against others, you kind of haven't done that, you know? So I'm just not on board yet.
I like the fight.
Well, I do. But I was like, bitch, you're kind of skipping a lot of bantamweights to get to Jose Aldo, bitch. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of people between you, Sean O'Malley, and Jose Aldo, who has been fighting some top dogs and doing his thing. Now, he's on the verge of knocking on Aljo's door and saying, I want your belt. Mm-hmm. Aljo's telling him, well, I'm fighting the guy that last beat you and Peter Yan. You should maybe worry about TJ Dillashaw because he knocked on my door about a month ago, 2 months ago. So that's where they're at. They're an exclusive neighborhood like Bel Air, Beverly Hills. Sean O'Malley's still down in Long Beach or something like that, you know, or wherever. And he's not in that neighborhood yet. He's got to do what like Dominic Cruz is doing. He's fighting Pedro Munhoz, or maybe fight Dominic Cruz, or maybe fight Jimmy Rivera. No, he's gone. Jimmy Rivera is no longer there. Or you know, eventually it would have been nice to see him go with Cody Garbrandt. They used to kind of talk smack, but Cody Garbrandt's now a flyweight. But Rob Font, Corey Sanhagen, you know, you still got to get through a few casts before you can get to Jose Aldo. Mm-hmm.
But the matchup itself. And what it would do for both guys, I think, is perfect. It's just, I think Jose Aldo is looking up,
right,
and not down.
I don't think it does much for Jose Aldo. You think it does something for Jose Aldo?
I think it does because it's a name. You know, Sean O'Malley is a good name. It puts a lot of eyes on it. I think a lot of talk. Huh?
So does TJ Dillashaw.
True. Yeah. But I think it's just a fun fight that a lot of people would really, really be down with.
Now, look, in 3 months, I could sound like a hypocrite. If Sean O'Malley beats this Julian Pava, who's recently competed as a flyweight, he's moved up. He's legit. But if he were to beat him and then, let's say, fight Corey Sanhagen in April and beat Corey Sanhagen, then in July I could be going, hey, Goz, fist bump, man. I want to see O'Malley versus Aldo. So I would sound stupid because 6 months, prior to that, I was not interested. But that's how fast the sport can move. So bookmark that as George in December of 2021, December 9th, is not interested. He could be interested, but I just think O'Malley's got to pay his dues like some of the other bantamweights to get to – for the words, Jose Aldo, to come out of your mouth, I just don't think he's paid those type of dues.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right. I guess lastly, before we kind of wind down and finish up with UFC 269, Tyron Woodley is promising no shenanigans. I'm knocking him out. Yes, he said this before in MMA when he's been criticized that his fights are slow or tactical and he doesn't put himself out there, but goes now he's older in his combat sports career. This is a huge payday. If he goes 1-1 with Jake Paul, that trilogy would be outstanding. What do you think? And especially because he probably knows he may not have that 8-round cardio. Is he going to go balls out and go for it and maybe get rid of this guy within 4? Are you buying it?
I think I'm Dominic Cruz right now. Like, I've always admired Tyron Woodley's career, especially how it began. And then him getting to the UFC and winning a title and all that. But the one thing I haven't been able to do in the last couple of years with him is I kind of mute him in the sense that when the things he says, I don't really care anymore. I just want to see him do it. I want to see it done in the cage. And I believe that in this particular instance, because there's so much money on the line in a possible third fight, I think he is going to come out guns a-blazing a little bit more. But, I mean, if it were that simple, fights would be getting made 2 weeks in advance, and they would just be fighting. There'd be no sense in having camps, right? Right. Regardless of how many times Tyron Woodley's gone through this in his career, I still think you need at least 75% of a full camp to put on some kind of showing. And I just hope he's not taking that for granted just to make a paycheck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I tend to lean on the side of giving people that have earned it. A world champ has earned it. An All-American Wrestling has earned it. So when they give, I guess, their word, or when they buckle down and say something different, I lean towards the side of, I think this cat's serious, you know? And buying it in a week or two, I could be saying, what the fuck? Remember we around and be like, oh God, why did we order this pay-per-view? We weren't clowning on GSP skills. He was just so dominant that the fight was less than aesthetically pleasing. You know, it wasn't bloody. It wasn't compelling. That's why when somebody would get a shot on GSP, we would literally leave our couch where we were sitting, go, oh shit. Kind of like when Smokey reacted to Debo knocking out Red, and he goes, oh shit, you know, and because GSP was almost untouchable. So if somebody got him down, or if somebody applied a submission or knocked him down, you're like, what the fuck? You know, but I remember GSP, I would be like, why did we order this pay-per-view? Like, it was different. He was dominant, winning, but it wasn't exciting, you know. Maybe that'll happen in 2 weeks. Why did I order this? But you can count on me, goes. I'm going to order it, so I'll take the hit.
Yeah.
I'm going to order it. Go Tyron. MMA versus Scrubs. No, I'm just kidding. I respect Jake Paul. He's done great with his YouTube channel, and then he came over to boxing, and he hasn't really boxed boxers, but he found 3 prize fighters. And look, he's paying Tyron well. Tyron doesn't seem to complain, and others don't, so...
I have mad respect for that kid, man. He not only accomplished a lot of things, he did it his way.
Yeah.
You know how hard it is to do that? You know, he just came over and he basically had this plan and he did everything the way he wanted to do it. And he's done things along the way with his brother's career. You know,
he snagged Floyd's hat. He's given to charities and, you know, he's having fun. He's enjoying life.
Mm-hmm.
UFC 269 this Saturday goes, let me just blast through some of these and whatever wags your tail, great. It starts off with Priscilla Cachoeira versus Jillian Robertson. We got Tony Kelly versus Randy Costa. Costa's a fun guy to cover. You know, he gives us a lot of time, usually before or after his fights or both. But I root for the guy, man. I got to be open about this. He comes to fight. He comes to entertain. I will always be interested in his fight, even if he's buried way down in the prelims.
Yeah, no, Randy's a fun guy. The fight that he had with Adrian Yanez, I mean, he gave Yanez hell too. You know, yeah. It just came down to the Yanez is just a really good fighter. And I think with each fight, we're going to learn just how good this kid is. But hopefully Randy's able to make some adjustments here and turn things around. But he I think he's something. You know, he seems like he's always in the gym. He's always training. He's part of a good gym. He says all the right things. So hopefully he can get back on a winning streak.
Ryan Hall versus Derek Minner. Hall's the guy that loves to attack the legs, and apparently a lot of people turn down fights with him. So he's just unique. But I always enjoy watching his fights. They're not too pleasing because he can either just do away with you or the fight goes to a decision. But I'll be tuning in. Matt Schnell versus Alex Perez is kind of buried. These two guys are top flyweights.
Good one.
And the winner will he'll have a say in the title elimination, I guess, that'll be 2022. Not right away, because the winner of this fight will still need another win. But the winner of this fight with another win is now like Askar Askarov or maybe Alexander Pantoja, where they possibly have next to the winner of Davis and Figueiredo versus Brandon Moreno. Hopefully after this fight, we'll never see Figueiredo and Brandon Moreno again.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning fighting each other, but that's how important this fight is. So be on the lookout for this one. Alex Perez, a big favorite. Matt Schnell always comes to fight. Miranda Maverick versus Aaron Blanchfield. Eric Anders versus Andre Muniz. Jordan Wright versus Bruno Silva. Anything there jump out at you guys?
Nah, you know, believe it or not, when you look at the card, I actually like the front part of it. And then I think the middle part is just okay, and then it starts to get good after that.
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, the Perez and Schnell fight, that's a very underrated fight. You don't want to miss that fight. That's going to be a lot of fun.
The last time this guy fought, you did a shoey, so be on the lookout. Tai Tuivasa, he's fighting Augusto Sakai. Those are two good, solid heavyweights, both ranked. Check them out. Pedro Munhoz versus Dominic Cruz. I wonder if Pedro Munhoz is going to get a nice little bonus from a certain individual if he were to get a nice KO. Santiago Ponzinibbio versus Jeff Neal is still on. And the reason I'm kind of emphasizing it's still on is Jeff Neal was he had a DWI about 2 weeks ago. I think the day of Thanksgiving, he got pulled over in McKinney, Texas. And he was driving, so under the influence, or DWI is driving with influence, something like that. It's the same thing. And then he also had a weapon in his car, so a gun in his car. So, you know, that fight could have possibly been in jeopardy. But usually what happens is you post bail, you know, you sober up in jail, you post bail, and then you can't drive until that gets sorted out, depending on your attorneys. Some people have done time. Luckily he didn't harm anybody, but he could have. Obviously that's something to be taken serious, and this could, you know, jeopardize his insurance, his ability to retain a driver's license, blah blah blah, all that stuff. But in terms of fighting, he can fight. He didn't have to drive to get here. He flew, and he can still fight. He can still earn a paycheck. But that's a pivotal matchup, goes for both guys.
Yeah, but we know that. Ponzinibbio knows that. Does Jeff Neal know that? Because just being in that situation, that's not the ideal training situation to be drinking and
get blood pumping. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know where his head is, man. To be honest, to be doing this right now.
Yeah, and you know, Ponzinibbio is not much of a favorite in this one. He's like -130, -125, +100, +110 on the other side. So maybe scan the Insta and see what Neil's kind of been up to, if there's any semblance of, well, that wasn't his only time, he was at the club, you know, 3 weeks before or whatever, then yeah, maybe he's going through the motions. I don't know, but you don't want to stain anybody. This could simply be just like you and I goes, we had a Thanksgiving celebration with our family. There was some wine there. You may have had your second glass, and with him being so obviously dehydrated, probably he may have just been over the level. But the gun charge kind of concerns me a little bit too. I mean, it is a state where you can carry. I don't know. I don't really want to dive into it or anything, because he's fighting is the point, is what I was really trying to get. And he could have been blitzed. He may have just maybe had that second glass of wine that he shouldn't have. I don't know. I didn't look at it that hard enough, but he's competing versus Ponzinibbio, and I've been looking forward to this fight, and it's still on. There's 15 again on Saturday. Then Dan Ige versus Josh Emmett is also the other one to look out for. Goes on the undercard. Emmett hasn't fought in a while. Ige, of course, looking to get back in the win column. Ige is a guy that we've known for a while over here at Extreme Couture, so this should be a good one.
Yeah, that one, the Perez Chanel fight. You know, when you'd watch like old WWF, and there was always that like intercontinental matchup in the middle of the card that would sometimes get your attention more than what would be on the main card.
Mm-hmm.
Those are those types of fights for me. I really want to see Emmett and Ige. I think that's going to come down to both guys are very similar in the way they push a pace. But if you look at the coaching, I think the coaching is going to be really interesting in between rounds. Great coaches on both sides.
Definitely. All right. So then let's see. The other fights are Cody Garbrand versus Kai Kara France, Holly and Paiva versus Sean O'Malley. Any thoughts there?
Yeah, decent fights, but yeah, they don't get my tail wagging, as you said.
Really? Kai Kara France and Cody Garbrand? You're not excited about that? It's the debut of Garbrand.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said something else. What did you say?
Kai Kara France and Cody Garbrand, and then the other one was Holly and Paiva versus Sean O'Malley. Yeah. Any thoughts on either one of those?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Sean O'Malley fight, it's just fun to see what's going to be next, what happens with the kid. But the Kai Kara France, Cody Garbrand fight is what I believe will be the best fight on the card. I think that's going to be a great, great fight. And I don't know that the way those guys push paces, the way they throw, I don't know that that can make it to the judges. I actually think somebody will probably go to sleep in that fight.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm actually going with Kai Kara France in that one.
Well, you got the underdog, because Cody Garbrandt comes in around minus 140, 145. Kai Kara France comes back at about plus 120. So a good parlay piece, or even just a straight play. But yeah, you're right. This one could possibly steal the show. You know, through all this, you know how I said there was 15 fights?
Mm-hmm.
Remember, Masvidal versus Edwards was supposed to be on this card. It would be 16 deep, man. That would be crazy to add to this pay-per-view, but we know that Masvidal had an injury. He had to pull out. But can you imagine?
That'd be crazy.
Yeah. Amanda Nunes minus 900, minus 800, minus 1,000 all over the place against Juliana Pena, plus 550, plus 630, plus 600. She's all over the place. Well, we got to cover it. Amanda's great. Let me just say she's great. I don't think anyone's unbeatable. But if somebody said, bullshit, tell me somebody's unbeatable. Somebody's got to be unbeatable. You got to tell me somebody that's unbeatable. Then I'd go, well, Amanda Nunes? You know, I guess that would be my next one. Maybe Valentina? I mean, they both lost. But they've been unbeatable in the last 5 years or so. So, and Valentina's only lost to Amanda. So, like, champions that just appear to be right now close to unbeatable, I would say Amanda Nunes and Valentina. You got to start with those.
Yeah, it's odd because, like, you know, when you look at some of the biggest upsets in history of combat sports, like, at least if before Buster Douglas and Mike Tyson, if you said, well, how can this dude win? You know, I would at least say he is bigger. You know, he's got the longer reach. Maybe they're in Tokyo. I just feel like I don't have anything to say when it comes to Juliana Pena. And it's not that she's a bad fighter. It's just Amanda is clearly better than her in just about everything. It's a stretch. It really is. I mean, there's a reason why those odds are so high.
She's got to wrestle. Her stand-up is just, it's not awful. It's just awful compared to Amanda's. She does not want to be standing across from Amanda. Unsuccessful in 3 takedown attempts. Oh, at that point, just close your eyes if you don't want to see violence. Because Amanda Nunes will light her the fuck up.
Yeah.
You know, I was thinking about what I said. Somebody could very well go, well, Usman's been unbeatable as of late. And they would be right. To be fair, they would be right. But Usman also loses rounds. Amanda, I don't remember her losing a round recently. I remember Valentina losing a round to homegirl. Jennifer Maya took her down, I believe. So she did lose that round. But for the most part, they I mean, that's how great these fighters are. They don't lose rounds. I just think the competition's tougher for Kamaru Usman, but he's a great champion right now. Mm-hmm. Israel Adesanya, he's lost rounds as well. But as of late, he's been pretty untouchable as a middleweight. Of course, we know he went up to light heavyweight and didn't go well for him. But anyway, lastly, we got Charles Oliveira versus Dustin Poirier. I've been going back and forth. I was telling the guys on Triple G show that I do with Goz and Richard Hunter. I believe it was there. If there's one prop I'm going to play, it might be Oliveira round one.
Submission?
Submission, yes. Because once Oliveira started to add wrestling and that phenomenal jiu-jitsu he has, then I think round one, if he gets an early takedown, then you got to feel good that that's a possibility. Mm-hmm. But to be fair, Dustin Poirier is a Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt. He's good at getting up. He's not the best at stopping takedowns, but he's good at getting up, and his hands are incredible. If they just stand, Oliveira's developed weapons over the years that now are lethal. I think before he was fighting but just didn't really have much of KO power, but now he's kind of developed that. And so Poirier would have to be a little bit on the lookout there, but Poirier's pretty sharp, man. He's pretty sharp. So in the end, I think the safest pick is Dustin Poirier, and I think he can get it done late because I think Oliveira is breakable, and you know, he's lost a handful of times, man. He's lost like 8 times. It's different ways in which he's lost, and some of them have just been getting pounded out. So I don't think if he's unsuccessful with getting the fight to the ground, I just don't think he can stand the whole 25 minutes with Poirier, because Poirier's accurate and he's got power.
I have Dustin winning somewhere around, probably around round 3. I think we all know what Charles Oliveira is going to do early on. And Dustin's a pretty smart fighter. I think he's going to figure things out. I think he's going to stay away from him early on and apply pressure when he needs to. But it's one of those moments where I think he's going to catch him and then put his foot on the gas and finish that fight.
And I think that's what hurt Conor McGregor. I think Poirier's pressure, along with his accurate striking, was also something McGregor was not liking. Mm-hmm. McGregor likes to control the pace and dictate the terms of where he wants to stand in the octagon and how he wants to attack you. And Poirier wasn't letting him do that. And Conor's one of those where, I'm not saying he doesn't have a chin. He does have a chin, but he can be put down. But Conor's one of those guys where he gets hit, it affects him. Even if it didn't wobble him or, you know, it didn't daze him. What I'm saying is you can tell when someone kind of gets checked back into a position of not being the bully, or we say the hammer versus the nail, it affects them. It affects some more than others. Like, there was times when Chandler would blast Gaethje, but Gaethje didn't seem as concerned. Obviously, Chandler has got power. I'm not saying he doesn't have power. I'm saying Gaethje doesn't mind getting hit. Doesn't alter what he's there to ultimately do. Conversely, Chandler's a little bit of the same as well. But there's just some fighters where you can hit them and they are good at just realizing that that's just part of the game, you know. But I've noticed that when McGregor gets hit, boy, does that change his posture and I guess his energy of just being somebody who's, you know, like, it's just a matter of time. I'm going to catch you. Quit backing up. You know I got you. That one hurt. Boom! And then all of a sudden he gets hit. And it takes him like 15 seconds or so, you know. So he has to keep them hands up. Otherwise, someone will blitz him. And that's what Poirier can do to you. And that's what Oliveira doesn't have, is when he gets hit, he's a little bit uncomfortable. He's lucky that round ended against Michael Chandler, because otherwise that that probably doesn't go his way, but he collected himself in between rounds one and two. I got to give him props, and he went after it. Yeah. So we'll see. But in the end, I think Poirier is too much. All right. With that, we're going to get on out of here. Thank you again to all of you that listen to the show and constantly send us feedback via social media. We pretty much see it all. So thank you so much. We appreciate that. Perhaps in the future, we'll get better at getting back to shout outs and answering some questions or just making comments based off of you guys' the things that we see, you know, on social media pertaining to the show. So again, we appreciate that. And finally, on Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, Goz and I will be right here on MMA Junkie with you guys for the next, I think it's about 5 hours. We're committing to two on the prelims. That's four fights. And then three on the pay-per-views, five fights there. So a total of nine fights, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific for your UFC 269 watch-along. Please share. Please retweet. Let's get as many people in our chat room and hanging out with us so that we can get so we can start building these again, because it looks like now everything's all systems go with USA Today Sports, Tipico, the gambling website, and our partners over at Panda, formerly Sportscaster. For Goz, I'm George. Have a nice day. Keep it locked on MMA Junkie throughout the week. We'll see you on Saturday night. Go out there and be a champion.